After a long, strange year, the doors are open at the Kansas Museum of History in Topeka. I'm Kay McIntyre. Today on KPR Presents, we're visiting their museum and their exhibit, Upward to Equality, Kansas Women Fight to Vote. Mary Madden is the director of the Kansas Museum of History. Mary, it is great to see you.
Thank you. I'm glad to visit with you. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. Take us back to March 2020 and the day the Kansas Museum of History closed its doors for what would be upwards of 14 months.
It's hard to believe. Yeah, it coincided with the opening of this exhibit. So we were all ready to have a grand opening on Friday, March 20th, and it never happened. And so we've dusted the exhibit through the months, and we're ready to open it tomorrow. It was created to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote, universal suffrage, in 1920. So we'll just carry on that commemoration one more year.
What is it like to close the doors of a museum for upwards of a year?
Yes, and it took a while to sink in. And then because of museum professional organizations, thank goodness for the web, because we started talking to our colleagues and seeing what they're doing, and we're all like just ducks on a water, paddling, what are you doing? What's happening? And we decided to go as virtual as we could. So we talked to some teachers about what they needed, and we created lessons with a program called Nearpod. So they're self-contained lessons, but interactive, so students can do the lesson online, and then the teacher can grade it. So we did that. We went to virtual tours, which we learned, surprisingly, the students are much better on virtual tours. So we have 100 kids out in Hays. 100 kids on a tour would not be manageable. And these kids were good as gold, asked great questions. So we're thinking, we're going to continue them, because just trying to get to the museum here in Easton, Kansas is prohibitive to many schools. And so for $30 an hour, we will give them a tour with a guide and answer all their questions, and it's just been a great success. We also created a new teacher newsletter and included in that a lot of short videos that they could use about like the pandemic or different topics. So we've just, I hate the word pivoted, but we've been very, very busy trying to share our resources, our educational resources in particular, with schools.
When you talk about taking 100 kids on tour of the museum, so this isn't just like you push a button and the tour starts and you're watching a video of someone walking through a tour. It's actually...
It's interactive. So we do it with iPads and just, it's a Zoom call. And so they're on their end, and they usually have a big screen. And we have one person filming the person speaking. And then the tour guide or our staff person at this point, because we were closed, we had no volunteers, no temporary staff, all of that. So they would give a tour, and we could really streamline it right to exactly what the students or teachers were interested in. And it's been really successful, and we hope teachers will take advantage of it. Like I said, the kids were good as gold, and they asked the best questions. And we could take them into collection storage to see our storage area. We have 120,000 things, which you can't take or don't want to take, a bunch of fourth graders into a storage area like that. But $30 an hour, and we'll be glad to give you a tour.
That's so interesting, Mary, because I think probably many people think, okay, the museum is closed. Nothing is happening in here until you reopen the doors. But that was not at all the case for the Kansas Museum of History.
No, and we also converted our museum after hours program. So it's a Friday night lecture. It's the second Friday of the month. And we started it with our major exhibit on a man, Colonel Hughes, who was in World War I and World War II. It was called Captured, because he went to the National Guard, he went to Texas to capture Pancho Villa, And then under Pershing, he joined the Army and went to World War I and captured World I with his filming. He was a photographer. And then he stayed in the military and was sent to the Philippines in October of 41. And so it wasn't very long after that he was captured at Bataan in April of 42 and spent 4 months captured as, or 4 years as a POW. And he kept a diary. So we transcribed the diary, and the family had given us all these materials. So we started a lecture series with it, and now we've grown. So it's grown so much, like we had Mike Everhart the other day, and he was talking about the oceans of Kansas and mosasaurs. And we've had talks on Santa Fe Trail, and so that's virtual now. And it's free. It's on Friday nights at 6:30, and people can sign in and ask us questions over chat. And it's been so successful and so rewarding because not only do we get locals, but we get people from all over Kansas, all over the United States, and all over the world. It's like, ooh, Brazil just checked in. It's like, wow. So it has been a lot of work because it's not like we're Luddites, but, you know, it's like, okay, we're all learning. And there were resources out there. You know, there's a Google for that. So we checked, talked to our peers, and just plowed ahead.
I'm visiting with Mary Madden. She's the executive director of the Kansas Museum of History in Topeka, which has just reopened its doors after 14 months of being closed. Mary, when you come to the museum now, is it back to business as usual, or are there some adjustments you've had to make?
We've had to make adjustments. Probably the biggest one the public will notice is our limited hours. We're 10 to 4, Wednesday through Saturday. And that is due to, that's all the staffing we can afford. And I wish we could be open more. The special exhibit gallery, the main gallery, will be open. The Discovery Place, we're still holding off on that, maybe for another month, just to get a little bit past COVID, because it is a hands-on gallery, and people don't have to wear masks. And so with the hands-on gallery, the Children's Discovery Center in town makes you wear masks because there's so much. And so we've just decided we're just going to keep it closed another month, see how things go, and then open it up. But the nature trail's open. Lots of things to do out here.
When I was driving in, actually, I saw a number of people out on the nature trail. And I think that's something that maybe people aren't really familiar with, that the Kansas Historical Society has quite extensive and beautiful grounds out here in Topeka. Can you describe the setting a little bit?
So when we decided to move the museum out here, one of the attractions besides the funding came from a local who wanted the museum built out here and gave us a good price on the 81 acres. But it was having the space to do outdoor programming. And the historic mission is out here, so we use that for programming as well. Brad Lovelace, who's now Secretary of Wildlife and Parks, God bless him, he was with Westar, and he helped us set up our nature trail, and we interpret it not as a, you know, this is a locust tree or this is poison ivy or whatever, but talking about how people adapted to the plains. So how they changed what was prairie into garden, what building material they had. So you'll see examples of stone fences, barbed wire fences, hedge, Osage orange fences. There's woodland area, so you can go through. So you have a big prairie area is one, the East Trail. The North Trail is more woodland because it's by the river. And then we have another prairie area with our one-room school. So you can walk to the school. And so you can get a real understanding of what type of animals were here, who lived here, what trails went through here historically. So it's an educational tour, just self-guided tour.
It's beautiful. Like I said, I saw several people out walking, and I thought, you know, when we're done here, I might go join them and go walk around the grounds. Well,
and there's some woodchucks out there. And so, yeah, it's always fun. We see bobcats, a lot of deer, but the woodchuck is, and beavers, they're kind of our favorites.
I'm visiting with Mary Madden. She's the director of the Kansas Museum of History in Topeka. They've reopened this week, and with it, their big opening of their exhibit, Upward to Equality, Kansas Women Fight to Vote. Mary, tell me about this exhibit and what was so special about that fight for the vote here in Kansas.
Well, I think it's a real educational opportunity. People, unfortunately, don't think a lot of things have happened in Kansas, and boy, are they wrong. So the women's movement and especially the vote for suffrage, Kansas led the way during the Bleeding Kansas era. The abolitionists who came out were against slavery. They were also for women's rights. So after the Civil War, the leading suffragists in the East chose Kansas to have the first battle for universal suffrage, because Kansas led the way against slavery. So they thought, if anybody's going to have the right for women to vote, they came to Kansas. So Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, they all came out here, and it failed. But they tried. I mean, they were out here campaigning. The state wasn't ready for it yet. One of the downfalls of that 1867 campaign was the split between the African Americans and both men and women and white women.
Let me just jump in here. You mean the split between people who wanted to give African American men and women the right to vote, generally the men, and people who wanted to have that to specifically focus on giving white women the right to vote.
Right. It led to a split in the suffrage leadership. And so Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton formed the National Suffrage Organization that focused primarily on giving white women the right to vote. And there were black women who were working for suffrage, but they were isolated. It's a product of the time. And then Frederick Douglass and Lucy Stone formed the American Equal Suffrage Association, because as Frederick Douglass said, you know, I'm fighting for my life. And eventually black men did get the right to vote in 1870 with the 15th Amendment. So this exhibit was also celebrating the 150th anniversary of black male suffrage. As we know, unfortunately, with Jim Crow laws and everything, it wasn't until the Civil Rights Voting Act of 1865 that things got better. But as we look at our society today, and the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, we still have a long way to go.
What types of things are you hoping that people learn from your Upward to Equality exhibit here at the Kansas Museum of History?
Well, I would really like them to know how in the forefront Kansas was, first with the 1867 constitutional amendment, which failed, but also because of Clarinda Nichols, a lobbying during the territorial period. Kansas women were the first to get the right to vote in school elections in the nation. So that was a biggie. And so that was a precedent. And then in 1887, women got the right to vote in municipal or city elections, and that was the first as well. And we also at that time then elected the first mayor, woman mayor, Susanna Salter from Oregonia, and then the first all-women city council was in Syracuse, and then later the next year in Oskaloosa. So that was the first, the women got the right to vote in city elections. And so that was 1887. Now, in 1894, they tried to pass another constitutional amendment. And some of the failure is a result of that was in 1893. There was a populist fight with the Republicans, the Democrat. The politics weren't right to get it organized. And so that failed. And so they try once again with some new leadership during the progressive movement. Under Lucy Johnston, and they eventually gained the right to vote. We're the eighth state in the Union to gain the right to vote on November 5th, 1912. So we're ahead of the curve, and when they come out, they'll be able to see a map that, you know, Wyoming was the first to give women the right to vote. And if you look at this map, all the states that gave women the right to vote were in the West. And people have wondered about a lot of things there, but it was probably a combination of the right time. You know, it was Clarinda Nichols said that, you know, people in Vermont, where she came from in the 1850s, were too set in their ways. So here you have a frontier. Everything's changing. So it was ripe. So then Kansans, after 1912, went east and south and worked on the national level with Carrie Chapman Catt and Alice Paul. So we were very active campaigning to continue for women's suffrage. And two things that are interesting, I think, in this whole battle was Alice Paul took the British model. So she was the combative one. She did the hunger strikes. And so a woman from Auburn, Kansas, Nina Allender, she designed a Jailed for Freedom pin. And so if you were in a hunger strike, you got the pin. And then the only woman from Kansas who earned that was Effie Boutwell Main Roselle. And so she actually got the pin. She went to that degree. Carrie Chapman Catt developed the winning plan. She was more working within the political machine, lobbied Wilson, as did Alice Paul. But
President Woodrow Wilson.
Yes, President Woodrow Wilson. You know, here women are going into the nurse corps, making sacrifices, going into the workforce, and yet they don't have the right to vote. And finally, he caved. And so the Susan B. Anthony Amendment was written and passed and ratified in 1920.
I'm visiting with Mary Madden. She's the director of the Kansas Museum of History in Topeka, which has just reopened its doors this week after a long time being closed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Mary, you've mentioned Clarinda Nichols a couple of times. Longtime listeners to KPR Presents may remember that we've had a presentation by Kansas author Diana Eichhoff, oh, yes, who has done, living history portrayal of Clarinda Nichols. Talk to me a little bit about who Clarinda Nichols was and how she came to take up this banner.
Well, I think a lot of these women who came out were, you know, like Susan B. Anthony, and they were in families that valued women's education. So you have that background. They're not just, you know, born out of nothing. And she came out here with her husband for the abolitionist fight. But she was tenacious, and she attended the constitutional conventions. And she would sit there with her knitting and then lobby people afterwards. And she is credited with giving, well, three things. Under the Wyandotte Constitution, which was written in 1859 and then passed on Kansas Day, January 29th, 1861, Clarinda Nichols secured liberal property rights for Kansas women, equal guardianship of their children, and the right to vote in all school elections. So very successful.
Do you think that 100 years later, we've kind of forgotten how hard these women fought to get something that we so take for granted, and take for granted to a degree that a lot of Americans and a lot of Kansans don't vote?
Yes. And also, I think technology today, you know, you forget that these women came out here and rode in buggies and would give like 100 speeches a month. And we have a wall in the exhibit, a wall of inkwells and pens, because that's how they were writing and communicating. There was none of this instant communication. And that's why we named the exhibit Women Fight to Vote.
While the Kansas Museum of History was closed over the past year, were there
parts of this exhibit that you were still able to bring to Kansans and other virtual visits of the museum while celebrations were going on virtually across the country?
I'm really glad you asked that question. Yes, we did a videotape of the exhibit, and Sarah Bell, who is a history, just got her PhD in history, she was our guest curator because she had just done all this research on this topic, and so we filmed her in the gallery. So if you go online, you can see that. There's also lesson plans with her video. And there's a number of other videos that we've posted out there so people can see the collection, see our exhibits. But I hope they take an opportunity to see the exhibit. Also, the publication, which was funded by Women Lawyers, the catalog, is available online, but also in print. So if people want a hard copy, they can just write to us and we'll send them one. Or if they come out here, they can pick one up.
I'm visiting with Mary Madden on today's KPR Presents. She's the director of the Kansas Museum of History. We've been talking about Upward to Equality, Kansas Women Fight to Vote. Mary, this is not the only exhibit going on at the Kansas Museum of History. What else is happening here this month?
Well, we have a wonderful collection of memory paintings by a woman in Kansas City. She grew up on Strawberry Hill. Her name is Mariana Grisnick, and she has graciously donated a large portion of her collection to us, and we are putting sections of it up in the hallway. So she grew up in the 30s, 40s, 50s in this Croatian community, very insulated, and so she has paintings where she records her memories of funerals, weddings, making povetitsa, sledding at Swiner's Dump, which was owned by Mr. Swiner, but she said it really wasn't a dump. You know, going to the church on holy days. So it's a wonderful snapshot of that time period. And Strawberry Hill fell to half of it was carved out when 70 went through. So they lost half their community. But these Croatian settlers came and they worked at the meatpacking plants, a lot of them. So there's pictures of that and or drawings, and it's just so fun. She's a very good artist.
When you describe them as memory paintings, I'm unfamiliar with that term.
I think some people would call it like folk art because she wasn't trained professionally, but she is recording memories. So it's not just creating something that is visually appealing. She's actually recording as without words what it was like in the old country, what it was like to come here. She has, you know, the women hanging laundry on Monday morning and women gossiping and killing chickens for dinner. And so you get a sense of what it was like. It's almost photographs, but paintings.
And that's a temporary exhibit.
It will be ongoing, but since we have so many, we're going to change it quarterly. So watch. If people would really like to know what's going on here, they should join our e-newsletter. So go to our website, e-newsletter, sign up. It's free. And then once a month, you find out all the great things we're doing.
And your website is?
KSHS.org for Kansas State Historical Society.org.
So you can look there to find out what's happening at the Kansas Museum of History. But there is one other exhibit going on here that I wanted to talk about. June is Gay Pride Month, and the Kansas Museum of History has an exhibit that kind of ties into that.
Yes, and it's more of just a case than a whole exhibit. But Gilbert Baker, the man who designed the gay pride flag, he was born in Chanute, grew up in Parsons, and got out of town as fast as he could. He said, "Dorothy, take me away," because it was not a very welcoming environment in the 60s. He joined the Army or Navy during the Vietnam War, and then he settled in San Francisco. And at that point, he became more of an activist, and he designed a flag with 8 and 9 stripes, a rainbow flag. And because of commercial purposes, now it's 6 stripes, but you'll recognize it. Unfortunately, he died several years ago, and he made a series of flags right before he died. And we are very fortunate to have one of the last flags he made. So we feel so privileged because he is a Kansan. He led to a very important movement in America. And so Kansans are still influencing the nation. And we want people to realize that there is a lot of things coming out of Kansas.
Mary, I'm so glad you said that, because I think here in the middle of the country, we tend to think, oh, you know, Kansas history is Kansas history, without necessarily having a sense that Kansans have done some amazing things, whether it's creating the first gay pride flag or really leading the way in the fight for women's votes.
Well, and here's a little known secret. So the Equal Rights Amendment, it was introduced by two Kansans. It was Charles Curtis and Susan B. Anthony's brother, Daniel Anthony. So it was introduced in 1923 in the legislature, or in Congress. Of course, it didn't pass. And then it was Eisenhower who reintroduced it in the 50s. So we have been interested in women's rights for a long time.
I'm visiting with Mary Madden. She's the director of the Kansas Museum of History, just reopened after more than a year being closed. Mary, let's go take a look at that Upward to Equality exhibit.
Glad to.
We've walked into the main exhibit area at the Kansas Museum of History. And Mary, we were talking about this a little earlier. Tell me about what we're looking at here.
We're looking at the Gilbert Baker flag. And so it has nine stripes, this one. And the some of the early flags had eight stripes. And I read that there were some issues with the color pink and having it, you know, as production issues. So that pink got dropped, and now it's down to six colors.
So this one goes from lavender, pink, red, orange, yellow, green, light blue, royal blue, purple.
And he sewed it.
It looks very much like something you've sewn on your machine. You know, it's not totally straight. It looks like something I would sew. Like the stitching's not totally straight. It looks very homespun.
When they sent it to us, they also sent us pictures of the flag just like this one, mounted just like this, that he gave to President Obama. So we're in very good company. These flags are very rare and very coveted.
How did the Kansas Museum of History get this?
Well, since he is from Kansas, we reached out, and Richard Clocky, actually, who used to work at the Spencer Art Museum, said, you guys might be interested in this, and just gave us a tip. Like any collection, people have ideas, and we followed up on it, and they were very happy to have it, to give it to us. They wanted to make sure it stayed on display and not put in a closet. And we said, we can do that. So it will be on permanent display with our new exhibits when we do new exhibits. So it's a treasure.
As are so many things here in the Kansas Museum of History. I feel like this is such a, it's such a gem.
Thank you.
So let's take a look at your Upward to Equality exhibit. This is radio, so our listeners can't see this, but can you tell me what we're looking at?
So we're talking about the 1850s and 1860s. So this, the writing utensils of the day were pencils or pen and ink. So we have pen and ink quills and inkwells from that time period to illustrate the writing campaign. So women, you know, they don't have the technology we do today to share their message. So they were out giving lectures, but also writing to legislators, councilmen, mayors, just anyone who would listen, and trying to get their support. So it's an example of, I think you look at it and you go, what, that would be a lot of work.
These quills and inkwells, some of them are really beautiful. You know, some look quite utilitarian, but others are really beautiful. And I think more than anything, it just gives you a sense of the physical act of writing.
We tried to get a buggy in here, but our buggy wasn't in good enough shape, because that would also illustrate. I mean, this is pre-trains. They're doing mainly eastern Kansas, because that's what's settled, but they're out there on a horse and buggy going from town to town to give talks at churches, at any homes, any place people would gather.
Mary, I want to draw your attention to another political cartoon, and it's this one that shows a father holding on to twins and his wife presumably going off to vote on Election Day.
So this was the type of propaganda put out by anti-suffrage organizations that the roles would be reversed. So if women got the right to vote, then men would be stuck at home.
In an apron.
Yeah. And then I want to vote. Another one says, I want to vote, but my wife won't let me.
Also in an apron.
Yeah.
And this one at the bottom, it has this little hen party for president, Mrs. Henry Peck.
Yeah.
And then the hen-pecked husband.
Yeah. For vice president, Mrs. William Nag.
Mary, there's a beautiful silver set over here. Silver teapot, sugar creamer. What is this?
Well, this section of the gallery is dealing with the 1880s when the Women's Christian Temperance Movement really got started. So 1881 is Kansas becomes the first state to prohibit alcohol. And so the WCTU is very powerful, and the suffrage women were, it was hand in glove. They all supported, they worked with each other and on the same campaigns. And so this is a tea set that was served to Carrie Nation. Now she comes a little later. She's more like 1900, 1901, but it's just an example of how women got their message across. Sitting down, having tea with other women, with politicians. Oh, and one of the things Kansans should be really proud of is that the National Women's Suffrage Movement recognized Kansas for their leadership by picking the color yellow for their movement after the Kansas sunflower.
I knew yellow was one of their colors, but I didn't realize that was why.
Because Kansas had led the way, and so they chose yellow for Kansas.
Mary, there is a beautiful dress over here and an axe.
This is Carrie Nation.
I had a feeling maybe we were headed
that
direction.
Yeah, we have a lot of good Carrie Nation stuff. And Carrie Nation, she has some great quotes. You refused me the vote, and I had to use a rock. If I could vote, I wouldn't smash. So again, that anti-liquor, but also women's suffrage. And so starting about 1900, 1901, that's when she really got rolling and smashing saloons with this axe.
This is actually her axe.
Her axe and her dress. And she would have in her handbag, we have her handbag too, she would have little hatchet pins that she would sell for $5. We have her Bible. They're not on display right now. But yeah, she was internationally known for her activism.
You could do some real damage with that axe.
Oh yeah, we have pictures. You know, saloons didn't stand a chance there. That's the saloon in Enterprise.
That look on her face.
Well, I don't think she took no for an answer. I think she really liked her role and her celebrity. She was 120% dedicated to everything she did. This is a quote that's in the, it's also in the video tour, but in Nation's words, quote, the loving moral influence of mothers must be put in the ballot box. Free men must be the sons of free women. To elevate men, you must first elevate women. A nation cannot rise higher than their mothers.
Amen. Amen. Oh, Mary, there is a beautiful quilt here. What is this?
So this is a quilt that belongs to Lucy Brown Johnston and her husband. Lucy was leading the campaign in Kansas for suffrage when we actually got the right to vote in 1912. Women got the right to vote. And there were several things happening. Her husband was Chief Justice. Walter Stubbs was governor, supported the movement. So right time, things are coming together. And the quilt was made and given to her and her husband. And it has ribbons about the Kansas Equal Suffrage Association and all kinds of, here's the Kansas Federation of Women's Clubs. So lots of political ribbons. It's a crazy quilt named because it's not put together in any specific order.
What a great use for all those ribbons.
Yeah, right. And then
We have a campaign banner that was carried in a lot of parades. It says 1867, so the first campaign for suffrage, and then 1912. We have some buttons. So we have another artifact that's got a funny story. It's a dress, and it's called a hobble skirt dress. And when you look at it, you don't really see. I think there's a drawstring. But hobble skirts were popular for a very short period of time in the 19-teens. And what they were was they were gathered around the ankles. So this woman, Marion King of Garnett, wore this skirt to vote the first time she could vote in 1914. Well, she walked downhill to the voting parlor, and then she couldn't walk uphill quite so well, and she had to get a cab to get home because the skirt was too tight. So it's kind of it's a beautiful dress.
It's beautiful, but they're almost like MC Hammer pants, but it's a dress that's gathered really tight around the ankles. It looks like it would be impossible to walk in.
They were popular for a very short period of time. I mean, there's a reason for that.
It's gorgeous, though. That stitching on it is amazing.
And to know that that was the dress she wore, and that she took voting so seriously, she never in her whole life missed an election. She was so proud to be able to vote.
And then speaking of clothing, over here you've got a military uniform.
Uh-huh. It's a World War I nurse's uniform. And that the fact that we entered the war in 1917 and women were helping with the war effort as a nurse, taking over men's jobs. It was just that extra log in the fire that said, come on, you know, we deserve the right to vote. President Wilson was not so supportive of it. And if you look here, there were protesters outside the White House, and they carried signs, but they also have sashes. And this one's the University of Kansas. So there was a woman from the University of Kansas and these other universities, and they were just hanging out in front of the White House harassing the president.
I love this. There's a banner, Mr. President, how long must women wait for liberty? And on one side of that banner is someone from KU. On the other side of that banner is someone from the University of Missouri.
Well, obviously they got together on this issue.
They were able to agree on this.
Yeah.
Mary, it strikes me that one of the things that I've been drawn to in looking at this exhibit is the clothing that people wore. What is it about the clothes of an era that really brings home history in a really personal way?
Clothing is a reflection of the time. I mean, just look at what people wear tonight now. We're very relaxed. And wars are a great watershed for change in clothing. Like, during World War I, skirts got shorter. I mean, fabric shortage. World War II, again, they get tighter because of fabric shortage. Clothing, hair, furniture, it's all part of design and is part of a changing society. And you can look at clothing, and it does say about a specific era and what was acceptable. So the end of the exhibit talks about what happened after the 19th Amendment passed and was ratified in 1920. So what first happened in Kansas after that? One of the outcomes of the 19th Amendment was the formation of the League of Kansas Women Voters. And Carrie Chapman Catt, who was the leader on the suffrage amendment, became the first president. A woman from Wichita was on the nominating committee. So again, we're right there. And then because women in Kansas had the right to vote in 1912, we have our first female legislator in 1918, Minnie Grinstead from Seward County. At that point, the superintendent of public instruction was an elected official, so Lizzie Wooster in 1919. We talked a little bit earlier about how with the Equal Rights Amendment that followed 19th Amendment, it was two Kansans who introduced the Equal Rights Amendment, Senator Charles Curtis and Representative Daniel Anthony in 1923. And when that failed, President Eisenhower introduced and endorsed it again in 1950. Of course, both failed, sadly. And so we end with this poster of women to show that, yes, we've made changes, but you have, as recently as 1978, you have Nancy Landon Kassebaum, the first woman elected to the Kansas Senate, our first governor in 1990. So a lot of very recent changes, ending with Charisse Davis, who is one of two Native American women elected in 2018, and the first openly gay woman. So we still have a lot ahead of us, but we are making progress.
I've been visiting with Mary Madden. She's the director of the Kansas Museum of History in Topeka. Mary, thank you so much for taking us through this exhibit today.
Well, it was fun. I missed it. I haven't looked at it in a year. It's kind of coming back to, so this is what we do.
So you can find out more about what's happening at the Kansas Museum of History at your website.
KSHS.org.
Mary, again, this has been great.
It's been fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.